It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it is presently 48 degrees. And we're looking for these rainy conditions to continue, and a high of 52 today. Southeast wind to 15. Rain overnight, too, with a low around 48. That rain's could be heavy at times, with precipitation in the amounts of half to three quarters of an inch possible tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak active COVID cases continue to hover over 100. An audio postcard from our recent rodeo, and an update on the last day of their last special session in the legislature. That plus a look at our new Board of Fish candidate after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Dramatic testimony on Capitol Hill today from four elite female gymnasts who appeared before a Senate committee to talk about the sexual abuse that they say former team doctor Larry Nassar inflicted on them for years. Lawmakers are examining why the FBI failed to do more to investigate Nassar, who is now serving a de facto life sentence for child pornography and molestation. Here's NPR's Tom Goldman.
Gymnasts Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, Allie Raisman, and Maggie Nichols spoke emotionally and at times angrily about the abuse they say Larry Nassar committed under the guise of medical treatment. Biles, a seven-time Olympic medalist, publicly revealed her abuse in 2018. She said the impact is never over.
I blame Larry Nassar, and I also blame an entire system that enabled and perpetrated his abuse.
A recent Inspector General's report said FBI officials failed to respond adequately after learning about the allegations against Nassar in 2015, and the failures allowed Nassar to keep abusing athletes for at least another year. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
The White House is pushing back against reports that Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley may have been insubordinate when he made calls to a Chinese general, ostensibly in an effort to avert a possible nuclear war. NPR's Mara Liasson with more.
According to a new book by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa, Milley was concerned about then-President Donald Trump's stability, and he reportedly told his Chinese counterpart that he would give him a heads up if Trump ordered a nuclear attack on China. That has some Republicans demanding Milley's resignation, but the White House has responded with a ringing endorsement of Milley, praising his leadership, patriotism, and fidelity to the Constitution. Asked if Milley did the right thing, President Biden himself said this.
I have great confidence in General Milley.
The Defense Department says the calls Milley made were not out of the ordinary and that he regularly communicates with his counterparts all over the world, including China and Russia. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Now, the California Governor Gavin Newsom survived a recall election. State Democrats are looking at the long-term impact of the process. Scott Schaefer, of member of Station KQED, on the fallout.
Some legislators, Democrats, today are going to be releasing plans to reform the recall process. And I think that there may be some appetite for that, not just in the legislature, but among voters. I think a lot of people saw this as a tremendous waste of money, $300 million, and a luxury that the state can't afford, not just financially, but also it was a distraction from so many serious problems that now have to be addressed.
Scott Schaefer reporting. The Aurora Police Department in Colorado is accused of engaging in a pattern of racially biased policing. Today, the state's attorney general said that a civil rights investigation found the department's culture enabled officers to treat black and brown people differently than white people. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was up 236 points. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 19 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. Eight cases are close contacts of previously reported cases, 8 cases are classified as community spread, 2 are of unknown transmission, and 1 is travel-related. 122 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. 1,787 cases, 74 local hospitalizations, and 7 deaths are now officially associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. Kodiak is considered a medium-sized Alaska city, but it's also a little country. At no point is this more obvious than at the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair. KMXT's Dylan Simard brings us this audio postcard on the rodeo on the rock.
All right, here goes Mr. Cyrus Stowe all the way. This little cowboy right here is all cowboy, let me tell you that.
Dakota Evans stands to the side of the rodeo pen with a cowgirl swagger. She leans on the fence with cigarette loosely in hand, eyes hidden behind blue-tinted sunglasses. The 23-year-old's horse stands next to her, similarly indifferent to the spectacle.
My mom always done it since she was a kid. When she was pregnant with me, she did it and won everything, so I guess it kind of runs in my blood to do it.
Evans is a barrel racer and pole bender, both challenges which demand weaving a horse through a pattern of obstacles at high speeds. Her younger brother does it too. She made good times, but not under the conditions she prefers.
I'm using my little brother's saddle because I didn't think I was going to be riding today, so I'm riding his saddle. He's doing pretty good, stumbled a little bit, but he's doing all right.
Competitive riding is definitely the main attraction, but it's far from the only draw. Kodiak's September 5th rodeo was hosted by professionals who MC rodeos around the country. Pierre Chili Pepper Perez is a self-described funny man who has traveled from far-off Texas to tell jokes and work up the crowd.
So I just got kind of thrown to the wolves, per se. And I guess I did pretty good because everybody was like, man, you're hot. You're on fire like a chili pepper. And kind of the story so goes.
His wide smile and good humor make him naturally predisposed to the job. This is far from his first rodeo, although he remembers his first rodeo on Kodiak fondly.
The very first time I came out here, there was a bull that had gotten out called Snowflake. And he busted through the, he jumped the fence, he busted through all the chutes, he hit people's cars in the parking lot, he gored a horse. We ended up roping him on the back, off the back of a truck with a 4-inch tow strap.
Perez says that the Kodiak Rodeo is one of his favorites on his circuit.
Well, you know, what I really truly love about the Kodiak Rodeo is the home feel of it. You know, everybody's pitching in, that nobody's afraid to pull out some elbow grease and get to work and to just make this whole thing really come together. It's just good, wholesome family fun, you know.
Several hundred people attended the rodeo, which is now in its 51st year. The rodeo is organized by the Kodiak Rodeo and Fairgrounds, which is a nonprofit. The first rodeo was held in 1968 on the site of the old experimental dairy farm in Calson Bay. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
At the end of yesterday's third special session, Alaskans learned they will receive a permanent fund dividend of $1,100, but lawmakers aren't done talking about it yet. Governor Mike Dunleavy has called the legislature into a fourth special session starting on October 1st. He issued the call yesterday after the legislature passed a bill setting the PFD amount for this year. The permanent fund dividend division estimates PFDs could be paid in roughly 30 days, which would make them slightly later than the usual October payment. Dunleavy put one item on the special session agenda, a bill or bills to address a fiscal plan. He also said that he wants the legislature to pass what he called, quote, the rest of this year's PFD, close quote. He said the amount the legislature passed was a partial PFD. Earlier in the day, Dunleavy told news reporters that the legislature should take the responsibility for not passing a plan to balance the budget.
At what point does this legislature behave like a legislature is supposed to and come up with ideas to solve the plan? Because right now it appears the only idea is to do nothing and have no result.
House Speaker Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, said the majority, if not all, of her caucus is interested in taking action on a long-term plan.
I am interested in a solid fiscal plan so we're not facing this PFD fight every year. It's just craziness. We need to come together as a body, and we need to come together as a legislature and resolve these issues.
Supporters of the $1,100 dividend amount said it is the most the state can afford and still follow a law that limits what the state can draw from the permanent fund earnings each year. Dunleavy said he would not veto the bill that funds PFDs at $1,100. Kenai area locals might know Indy Walton from the ice rink, where he coached the Soldotna High School hockey team. Or they might recognize him as a financial advisor with the local branch of Edward Jones. Now he's on deck to join the powerful State Board of Fisheries, the body that makes decisions about fish allocation and management in Alaska's waters. Governor Mike Dunleavy appointed Walton to the 7th open seat on the board earlier this month, months after his previous nominee was rejected by the Alaska legislature. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Walton's home is Soldotna, but he owns a sport fishing lodge in Igiagig and commercial fishes in Bristol Bay, both on his drift boat, Sniper, and overseeing his family's SetNet site. He says he's been following the politics of the board for decades, but it wasn't until this year that he considered throwing his hat in the ring, after friends from commercial and sport fish sectors told him he should go for it.
The day the deadline to apply came, I had a couple people in particular say, Indy, you got to do this and you got to do it today, you know? And so I'm like, what the heck, I'll throw my name in there.
Walton started set netting with family in the early 80s, first with his mom in Bristol Bay, and then his grandfather in Kodiak. In the early 90s, Walton bought his own set net permit in the bay. A decade after that, he and his mom bought a drift permit. He says they joked they were double dipping, since they were fishing both from the boat and the beach.
And so that's what we named the boat. We named it Double Dipping.
Though the practice of fishing both permits was not uncommon, the Board of Fish passed a rule prohibiting fishermen from using both set and drift netting gear within the same 24 hours. Walton says he transferred the set net permit to the name of his then 6-year-old son, who fished with him on the boat every day. His son still fishes in Bristol Bay as a drift netter in a boat called Turbo. Walton sees his experience in the commercial and sports sectors as an asset, and he says he knows how to listen to the two user groups that have long vied over issues of allocation.
When you start dividing them and you come between them and you set one group against the other, you're not solving any problems. You're just creating problems.
Ben Moore, executive director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, says he thinks it's valuable that Walton has both commercial and sport fishing experience to draw on.
I think it's incredibly important for board members to be able to understand all the different sectors and how they interact with each other and how decisions in one sector may have impacts in another sector.
Walton says there are no easy solutions to the fish warring in Cook Inlet, but he says one idea he'd consider for the Kenai River is limiting entry for sport fish guides, pointing to caps on halibut permits as an example of such a policy.
I really believe that decision to put a cap on it has actually benefited the halibut stocks.
He says the biggest issue he sees in the Kenai River is the dwindling king population. Kenai Peninsula set netters have paired restrictions with the Kenai River king run, so when the king run is struggling, their season is cut short. Walton says he knows some set netters who struggled this year.
And I really don't think that they had to struggle that bad. You know, I think everybody needs to struggle together to protect the kings. Not just one gear type, you know, it means sacrifice on everybody's part.
Ken Coleman is a set netter and vice president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. He says it's particularly important to have somebody on the board with knowledge of Cook Inlet, as the Board of Fish considers an agenda request from set netters to change restrictions on their fishery before 2024.
It's refreshing to see somebody from the Cook Inlet be appointed to the board. It's been decades since we've had somebody on the board that has a understanding of commercial fishing and in all the sectors of the fishing community in Cook Inlet.
Walton has been an outspoken critic of the controversial Pebble Mine project, and he says he's 100% opposed to it for what it could do to the watershed in Bristol Bay. That was a sticking point with Dunleavy's last nominee, Abe Williams, an employee of Pebble Partnership. He was rejected by the Alaska legislature during his confirmation vote last May. Extending limits on boat length in Bristol Bay was also a controversial topic during the confirmation process. Some fishermen say extending the limit on commercial boats past 32 feet could expand opportunities for fishermen in Bristol Bay. But others worry it would make it harder for local fishermen, especially, to compete. In a Facebook post last December, Walton says he thought ending the limit could be good for some fishermen and that he supported eventually extending the limit, KSTK reported. But Walton said in an interview that while he's open-minded to the idea, he's not for changing that policy at the moment. He said when it comes down to it, he's neutral.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm open-minded to hear both sides of that.
Walton's first meeting with the board will be this October when it holds a work session in Anchorage. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Doctors who work at the Providence, Alaska Medical Center said Tuesday that they've begun to ration care as Alaska endures one of the worst surges of COVID-19 in the country. A letter from the Medical Executive Committee of Providence, representing the independent physicians who practice at the hospital, said, quote, "We are no longer able to provide the standard of care to each and every patient who needs our help," close quote. Dr. Ryan Webb, a hospitalist and spokesperson for the group, says the staff has been gradually shifting toward, quote, "crisis standards of care."
Oftentimes we have to decide who comes up from the emergency room first to an intensive care unit bed. And so that's a normal part of the triage process in a hospital or an emergency room. Over the past week, I would say, we've been making more of those decisions, and those decisions have been growing more and more challenging to make.
Webb said the medical staff felt it had to be transparent with the public by making an announcement. He says caregivers now have to choose which patients to get care first or at all. Among those most affected are patients at hospitals outside of Anchorage who would normally be transferred to Providence. Webb says emergency room wait times have also increased dramatically.
So someone who maybe simply has a bad urinary infection or a heart attack or a car accident here in Anchorage is also facing unexpected delays that we think are outside of the norm and really outside the standard of care.
Webb says it's a demoralizing time for the doctors, nurses, and therapists at Providence.
You get into this job to provide great care for anybody that needs it and anybody that asks for help. And, you know, that is what we expect when we start our careers. And it is both very shocking and really tragic to be where we are at this point, where we're unable to do that.
Webb and state health officials say the public can help reduce the surge by getting vaccinated and wearing masks when in public indoors, regardless of vaccination status. Alaska set a new record Monday for the most patients hospitalized with COVID-19 since the pandemic. And for weeks, healthcare workers have sounded the alarm that Alaska's ICUs and emergency rooms are filling up, leaving rural doctors struggling to transfer patients into Anchorage. Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday his most forceful message yet, asking Alaskans to be vaccinated against COVID-19.
I strongly urge folks to get a vaccine, strongly urge them to do that.
He made the remarks while discussing the failure of legislation he proposed that was intended to ease the strain on hospitals from the recent surge in cases. Hospitals asked Dunleavy to issue a disaster declaration. He declined to do that and instead proposed the legislation, which would have increased access to telehealth care and temporarily relaxed some rules hospitals have to follow. The bill died in the House.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Tanner crab is coming on strong in the Gulf. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Bering Sea crab stocks are in dire straits, but that's not the case in the Gulf of Alaska. A huge Tana crab cohort that biologists have been tracking in the westward region for 3 years showed up again in this summer survey.
Pretty much all the way across the board here from Kodiak all the way out to False Pass, essentially, we found those crab again and in good quantity. The very rough, very preliminary numbers look like we've at least hit the minimum abundance threshold in Kodiak, Chinook, and South Penn.
Nat Nichols is area manager for Fish and Game at Kodiak. The last Tanner opener was for 400,000 pounds in 2020 as crabbers tapped on remaining legal males from a 2013 year class awaiting the current crop.
Tanner crab is getting to be legal size around 4 or 5, and then, you know, starting to die of natural causes or age out of the population by around 7 or 8. So once they start to become legal, we can expect them to hang around for, you know, potentially 3 years. There'll be more small crab behind them. You know, you can kind of think of this as the front edge.
The new cohort, Nichols says, is one of the largest ever. It appears to be 2 year classes with a broad range of sizes that could support several years of fishing.
In 2019, the estimate was $223 million. Last year in 2020, it was down to $108 million. But those crab are getting bigger and approaching a legal size. So even though you're seeing your estimate go down quite a bit, it's still going to turn into a pretty decent estimate of legal crab in the water.
Biologists have several weeks of number crunching before a decision is made. But Nichols says they're optimistic about a Tanner fishery opening in possibly 7 districts come mid-January.
Just based on meeting those minimum abundance thresholds, that at least opens the door for a conversation about 6 different fisheries. And that doesn't even include the Smedy Island overlap section of the Kodiak District would be open also. So that would be 7 different sections open.
A Tanner announcement will be made in early November. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 52, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, September 16th, to 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be as described in regulation. As previously announced, the following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 15th until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th. The Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, Southwest of Fog Neck, Northwest of Fog Neck, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast of Fog Neck, and Duck Bay sections of the Fog Neck District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larsen, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Iziut and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Fog Neck District. Until further notice, in that portions of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse anglers in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. And other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Public Health invites community members over the age of 12 to a COVID-19 vaccine clinic on Thursday, September 16th from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak High School. The clinic will be in the auditorium foyer and the Pfizer vaccine will be available. The high school is located at 722 Mill Bay Road. Let's bounce back from COVID-19. This message brought to you by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Listen for the island.
Little early there. Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 15th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:40. It will set again at 8:27. That will give us 12 hours and 46 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33 degrees set in 1987, and our record high was 73 set in 1985. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 3:31 p.m. of 4 feet here on the east side, followed by a high tide at 9:56 p.m. of 8.3 feet. Our next low tide will be at 5:21 a.m. of 0.5 feet, and then the high tide tomorrow will be at noon, 12:09 p.m. and 6.5 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will happen at 4:34 p.m. and be 5.9 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:25 this evening of 12.2 feet. Your next low tide in Larsen Bay will be at 5:49 p.m., a.m., at 0.6 feet, and a high tide tomorrow afternoon at 12:29 p.m. and 10.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island, Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning through tonight. Southwest 20 becoming southeast 25 this afternoon, and southeast 35 south of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 7 feet. For tonight, southeast 35 becoming south 20 knots late, seas to 10 feet. For Thursday, southwest 20 except northeast 25 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Thursday, south winds to 15 knots, will turn to southwest 25 knots late, seas 3 feet building to 6 feet later this afternoon. For tonight, east winds to 30 knots, seas to 7 feet, building to 12 feet after midnight in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, northeast wind to 25 knots, seas remaining at 12 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory through tonight, south wind to 15 knots, becoming southeast 25 knots late, seas building to 5 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southeast 30, diminishing to 15 late. And for tomorrow, east 10, becoming northeast 20 in the afternoon. For Marmot Island, the Sitkanak, gale warning, For Marmot Island, small craft advisory through Thursday, south wind to 15 knots, becoming southeast 25 late. Seas to 3 feet, building to 6 feet this afternoon. For tonight, east winds to 30 knots, seas to 7 feet, building to 12 feet after midnight with rain. And for tomorrow in Marmot Bay, northeast winds 25 knots and seas to 7 feet. The borough's Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding a regular meeting today at 6:30. The cases in this meeting will be Brecken's Vacation Relocation, Magic's Variance, and Canna's Variance. That's happening in the borough assembly chambers. The public is welcome to come and express their thoughts with the commission regarding these cases. Again, that's 6:30. Today, Assembly Chambers. Also today, the City of Kodiak and Kodiak Island Borough Cooperative Relations Committee will hold a meeting. That's happening at 4 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. This meeting is open to the public. For meeting packets, go to the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. The City of Kodiak has replaced absentee in-person voting with just plain early voting. Early voting is similar to when you go to vote at your polling precinct on election day. At the time you vote, your eligibility is verified. You're given a ballot to feed into a voting machine. Early voting ballots are counted and included in the unofficial tally on election night. And we encourage everyone here to take advantage of the option to vote early. The Assembly Chambers, which is located right up here in Borough Hill at 710 Mill Bay Road, will be open for early voting from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. every day, every weekday through October 4th. If you have any other questions, call the city clerk at 486-8636. And Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation's annual meeting will be broadcast on KMXT 100.1 FM on Friday, September 24th at 6 p.m. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will immediately follow the annual meeting via video conference. If you would like to attend the regular board meeting, please contact Jared Griffin at Jared, that's J-A-R-E-D, at kmxt.org for link information. The public is welcome to attend. You can also give us a call here at 486-3181.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.